Thank you, everybody, for staying along for this session. And whilst the others are just getting mic'd up, I'd like to be able to introduce this topic and, more importantly, just introduce the fact that we're delighted today be launching Project ESG. So it's the Payments Association's latest project initiative, which has the objective of being able to showcase case studies of great initiatives that are already going on around the industry, but also helping every member of the Payments Association, wherever they are today on their ESG journey across the various dimensions, to give them practical guidance, tools, recommendations of how to make progress, because the one of the key things about ESG is really that for all of us, it is a journey. Now, for this topic, we're specifically doing a deep dive into the topic of diversity and inclusion, and within that, the incredible importance of getting belonging right. It's one of those things that where we're looking at diversity and inclusion, we seem to be focused at the moment on looking at the statistics of what's involved. And yes, that's important. We need to be able to measure in order to create benchmarks, in order to improve. But we mustn't lose sight of the human touch. And getting the belonging aspect right to diversity and inclusion of all dimensions is essential. And I'm delighted to be joined on stage now by two individuals that have been so inspiring on my journey of learning about diversity and inclusion. We're gonna be sharing some of those stories and insights with you today. So please welcome on stage Chris Foster and Annette Evans. All right.
Thank you.
Do I sit in this in the
middle? Please. Oh. Take a seat, take a seat.
Hello.
So, delighted to have the opportunity to share our story. So, to start with, a couple of introductions. So, my name's Joanne Dewar. Many people know me from the fact that I've been for nearly a decade. I was at Global Processing Services, or GPS, latterly 4 years as CEO and then as vice chair. I've now pivoted to focus on what we can do as an industry across diversity and inclusion. I'm also sat here with long hair in a blue dress and normally found with a big smile on my face. So now let me let Chris introduce himself and then Annette.
Hi there, my name is Chris. I work for Global Processing Services. I'm the junior office engagement assistant, and it's been a revelation.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Joe. Thanks, Chris. So my name is Annette Evans. I'm previously the VP of People and Culture at GPS, currently at Google as a people consultant. Really happy to be here and tell you about our journey through the understanding of belonging.
It's a real delight to have you both here. Now, Chris, I'm going to come to you a bit later on, because Annette's undersold herself a little bit here, because she, within the work that she's done with me and the GPS team, she was actually my first employee nearly 5 years ago once I became CEO. And the first people resource that we had on the team. But she's actually took the GPS team towards the fact that at the end of 21, she and the team won the Best Diversity and Inclusion Strategy at the Employment Excellence Awards. And that's across all industry in the UK. So we're really doing something pretty special. And then in the last year, as we got involved with the Payments Association, with the Diversity and Inclusion Sprint, Annette was contributing to that sprint. So, but when you... Annette, when you first started with us, the bar was pretty low. There was a lot to do from an HR standpoint, wasn't there?
I wouldn't necessarily say the bar was low. You know, there was a lot of work to be done where we were at that stage in our journey. And I think it's really interesting when you come into a smaller business, like a fintech business, and figure out our steps and where we need to go with everything. So most of it, as we started off in our journey, was about, you know, putting the processes in place, making sure we had all of the resources. But what we didn't want to forget about is, what do we do when it comes to our values, who we are as an organization, what we believe ourselves to be out there in the big wide world? So after going through that process of kind of getting all the structures together, I remember myself and you sat down on many occasions and started thinking about, right, what do we stand for and what do we want to be known for? So in early kind of 2020, 2021, when COVID hit, we went through what I would call a journey of understanding. And I actually went through quite a, I call it an undertaking myself, of figuring out who I was as somebody in the HR world or somebody who had influence in the organization when it comes to culture. We went through some downtimes like many organizations when, you know, COVID hit, as I said, there was the George Floyd situation that occurred. And we knew we had to lean in and play more of an active role when it came to our employees. So we started that discussion, and you know, I said some quite poignant things about what I felt that we needed to do. I believe that we had to do a lot that was intentional. So I used the word intentional a lot when I started to come forward with ideas about kind of how can we approach this? So we're not just doing everything that other organizations are potentially going to do in these situations.
Yeah, so, and to add to that, I mean, already from a gender diversity perspective, we were doing pretty well, particularly with a female leader. It was all quite easy and natural. But as I found my voice, I recognized that I wanted to be able to use that voice not just for gender diversity, but to think about those that wouldn't get the opportunity to hold the mic themselves. And particularly after the murder of George Floyd, I mean, I think I did a lot of sort of soul searching and reading myself in terms of what difference could I make? And one of the things I recognized was actually the role of anti-racism versus not being racist, and the role, the active role that you can play, and how actually to progress the situation needed to be a white on white conversation. And it's the same for every type of minority represented group. You can't rely on those individuals that are representing that minority to be the voices that are campaigning to make the difference. So we'd been on that much of a journey so far, and the first piece of guidance was really to listen to our own employees, wasn't it? Do you want to take the story from there?
Yeah, no, definitely. And just to give some context, so as you said, when it came to gender diversity, we were doing really well, in my opinion. I think we had at the time 44% of our female, our leaders were female, which was amazing. So we really had that gender piece in the bag. Now, there are other strands of diversity, and we all know that there are, but there seems to be some times within our, you know, our careers where, you know, we're focused on one strand of diversity because it matters. So we had a lot of legislation come through when it came to gender pay gap. And we made sure that we, you know, put our all into the gender pay gap. But this was slightly different. There were emotions running high within the organization, and we had to do something quite radical within that time. So what I did is I came to our SLT at that time and said, right, I'm going to say something quite radical here. You're probably going to have to, you know, get some time and think about whether you want to go forward with this. But I suggested, let's get some external help, number one. Number two, let's listen to our employees. So I had a number of employees come forward and said, listen, I'm not in a good space at the moment. I don't know what it is, but I'm not in a good space. And I, you know, turning up for work every day is becoming a bit of an issue because there's that elephant in the room and we're not talking about it. So we seek that external help. We got an anti-racist organization in, and we did something called a listening forum, which was very practical in the sense that we were only on Zoom or, you know, Teams at the moment, at that time. We got, I think it was a handful of employees, up to 10 employees, to come on to a Teams call. The rest of the organization was invited, but they had to turn off their cameras. And in that moment, those employees got to speak about how they were feeling as black employees at the time. Now, no questions were asked. It was just a conversation and us sitting down listening. And I think for you and I, it was just the real start of something really beautiful. And, you know, we'll come on to where Chris comes in, but it was the beginning of the journey.
Yeah. So can you talk about some of the other sort of practical steps you've taken in to put in place what we needed to do to get the belonging aspect right?
So belonging, I think, in any organization has to start from the top. So it's what your leaders are essentially pushing down to the organization when it comes to belonging. So having that, you know, that conversation, which was a very difficult conversation with the SLT at that time, and them trusting in me and believing in me that doing something different would bring about change. And to this day, I thank the SLT that were there at the time, because they could have totally turned around and said, Annette, you know, this is way too, you know, external for us to bring internal. But what we have to understand is majority of our employees spend majority of their time at work. So if they're feeling, you know, emotional about a situation, it's really down to us to see how we can react and act. So the practical aspects was getting in that external help. And then on top of it, having different allyships within the SLT. So we had, I think it was three or four of the SLT that said, Annette, whatever you need me to do, I'm on board. And then we started from there, and it was really empowering to know that everyone was behind the same idea and the same, you know, the same point of call that we were going for.
And I think it's an important point to think that I know for me, each step I would go on my own journey, and I come to you, Annette, and say, oh, I've got an idea. You'd already thought about it and got the next sort of tool or idea ready to go, whether it was the setup of the employee resource groups or consideration of which recruiters we should be using or what training we should be putting in place. And I think it's something to reinforce that for all the leaders out here, so many of the answers are within your own teams, but you know, the people teams and the ESG teams aren't able to implement things without you know, you being there to sponsor and drive it. But many of the answers are already there, and where they're not there, they're there by extension, by reaching out to experts wider in the community. And one of the objectives of Project ESG is to provide the recommendations of the external experts that are out there that various organisations have used for their journeys. I'd also reinforce at this point that for me as a leader, if I wanted to lean in and be a real ally, I was very nervous, and I've spoken to others about this as well. You're nervous sort of touching some of these topics in because you're so nervous about being misconstrued, having phrases taken out of context. But if you go on a journey with your team, they understand that you are authentically on their side. You're authentically wanting to lean in, wanting to support, wanting to help make a difference. They'll be very forgiving if you use the wrong words. They'll educate you, they'll help you, and they'll back you to the hilt as you're actually getting out there and speaking more and more externally. So to move to the next chapter then, Annette, you know, tell us the story as to how Chris came on board.
So, as I said, that was the start of our journey. And Joe, you mentioned about recruitment. I think I just want to spend a little bit of time on recruitment because it's essentially the segue to what you can do in your organization. So for many of us, we use a lot of agencies, for example, to do our recruitment, or we have our internal recruitment teams. And it's very important to think about the type of agencies that you're using, especially, and what type of CVs they bring to you, and how intentional you are about looking at those CVs and asking the right questions. So part of the process was that any agency we had on board, we would vet them in terms of what they were doing on the side of inclusion and equality and equity. Now, really important. So if they brang, let's say, 100 CVs to us, we wanted to figure out, you know, have you done, you know, a wider search on this? Now, it's not easy. It's not an easy job. And if you want to bring in the different strands of diversity within your organization to reflect your community or the clients that you serve, it's going to take more time. So you have to bake that into your whole recruitment process. So it's not going to be 30 days and then the person's going to be sitting down in the chair. It will take longer. So what we started to do is actually look at, right, we're kind of on the journey when it comes to race. It's not perfect. We weren't perfect at that time. But then I had another rude awakening, I think in the shower one night, and I said, it doesn't stop here. What else should we be doing? So we've spoken about the gender piece, we've spoken about the race piece. Now, there are so many other underrepresented groups in our society. And then I started to think about disability. And I went through some of the stats, you know, we have a lot of data in the organization at the time, and realized we hadn't been doing much around that. And so I started to look at all of the roles in the business. What roles can be done in the business by people with physical disabilities, people with, you know, hidden disabilities. And we had that conversation and started to carve, you know, jobs together. And Chris was somebody who then appeared as being suitable for one of the roles that we wanted to recruit for.
Brilliant. So, Chris.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit to start with. What is your role at GPS? What's involved? So
I am the junior office assistant, and my roles are, so GPS have been very kind in regards of taking my autism, looking into my autism and understanding my capability factors within the organization. So I essentially start work about 7:30 in the morning, so I miss the rush hour. I come into work and I set up the meeting rooms ready to prepare for the day. I also then sort of like check my emails and then orchestrate my day. So then I sort of, you know, go and get the mail for the, you know, the mail to give to the relevant people. And, you know, just make sure the office is just set up ready to, you know, for people to come into the workspace.
That's brilliant. And how has your job feel to you?
I started on the 7th of March last year, and I'm going to be totally upfront and honest. Being a person with Down syndrome, I didn't think that I was going to fit in. And I think for myself, you know, I thought to myself, okay, I'll be here for maybe a month or so, a year in, and it's just been a complete and utter revelation. It is just, my confidence has grown so much as an individual. I feel valued, and more important, I feel seen. And I think one of the most important things here for me personally is the fact that being in this type of organization and showcasing myself and to the individuals around me that have children with special needs and how much of it has inspired them. And that for me is just, that's all that matters, to be seen.
And you've developed the most extraordinary relationships, haven't you, across the organization?
I have. I think, you know, the likes of, you know, Mel, who I would just wave to right now, you know, Betsy, I think, you know, it's been, you know, everybody who has just simply just showers me with, you know, real genuine support and just feel included. And I think this is what it's about right now. And what Lord Holmes was saying earlier on just really resonated with me, that to be included and to be seen and to be valued by society. And I think that's what's important here, that we're valued and we're seen.
And to be, yeah, exactly. And Chris, I'm going to be honest here. I completely, as much as, you know, I was really bought into you coming on board and we created this role for you, I completely underestimated the impact, the positive contribution you were going to be able to make to the company, the abilities that you have, and what you've brought to everyone. And to the point that, you know, that's really driven me to pivot my focus going forwards, to be able to share these kind of story and to be able to encourage other organisations to consider what they're doing in terms of their diversity and inclusion strategies in all sorts of dimensions. Because really, what you're missing out on is extraordinary. What Chris has brought into the organisation is a new dimension. It's a richness to the organisation, which doesn't go against. It's not a decision to say, right, do you invest in that or do you concentrate on company performance? Because investing in appropriately in diversity and inclusion, by definition, does positively impact company performance. And it is what part of the ESG portfolio of what all of our stakeholders are expecting of us, whether it's our shareholders, whether it's our employees, and now increasingly, whether it's our supply chain as well. So there's genuinely a win-win-win here. So Annette, quickly, can you describe any of the sort of considerations or adaptations that are needed when considering bringing in people with various disabilities?
Yeah, no, definitely. So I think with anyone who has a disability, that there will be some adaptations that's needed within the workplace. You won't necessarily know what that is just by meeting the individual. So there are various organisations, one being an organisation actually run by the government called Access to Work. Now, Access to Work spent, I think, the first kind of 3 to 6 months with Chris, day to day, coming into the organisation and just helping him get set up. One thing that we also did was ensure that Chris had a point of contact within the organisation on a day to day basis. So that was somebody at the time within the HR department, but it was someone that he could go to, you know, just have a chat with, or, you know, say, actually, I'm having some difficulty here and there. So if you remember, Chris, the first thing that we had to talk about was Chris said, I can only use a Mac. And it feels like you've got high standards, but it wasn't because of that. So I can only use a Mac. And at the time in the organization, we didn't use Macs. Another adaptation that had to be made. And it made everything so easy for Chris to say, right, I'm here. People can see me. I can do my work just like everybody else.
Absolutely.
Now, I had to learn a lot also because Chris, you said it yourself, the type of knees that Chris had at the time, we hadn't had it in the organization at the time that I had been there. So things like onboarding, the onboarding program that we had at the time was like a weeks long. It was too intense. And I remember speaking to you, Chris, and saying, is this too much? And he was like, it's a bit too much. Right, HR team, let's come together.
Brilliant, thanks, Ned. We're rapidly running out of time. And the one thing that I want to give a little moment for is when we took Chris on board, I didn't know that you had a little side hustle, didn't you? Do you want to explain what Open Book is all about?
Yes, so Open Book is a platform where we celebrate and educate brands about disability inclusion. It's been one of the greatest joys that I set up in 2020 and announced it in 2021. It's a platform where I've interviewed over 120 disabled people from all walks of life, from Paralympians to the creative director at Nike to just Ellie, who is the first Down syndrome model, who modeled for Gucci. And it's been one of the most impactful things because it's an opportunity for the disabled community as well as the special needs community to have a voice. And I think that's what's something that's so important in today's society when we look at the statistics out there right now for disability employment. It's at an all-time high right now. And by having these conversations, it's so important. And I'll finish on this final note. You know, a year I started at GPS, and to think, you know, me being here, that my difference would be so significant. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much to Chris and to Annette. Thanks very much for listening.
To access more podcasts, videos and articles, go to thepaymentsassociation.org.